folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We have a kind of tripartite show today. Gary LeMaster and Klaus von Stutterheim and I are going to be talking about different aspects of the upcoming election. I'm going to start off first talking about the polls that are in development. Mike Colsantino is going to be on Facebook. If you have questions, you have comments, get on our Facebook page and send them to Mike, and Mike will tell you where to go. No, Mike will respond in a dignified and professional manner. Wow, the 2020 election. I mean, this has got to be one of the most important elections in American history. I know we say that every time we have an election, but this time it's actually true. And I want to go over some of the poll numbers. I'm going to talk about. First, you know, it's looking good for Joe Biden right now. We'll talk about how whether to trust polls and how to take them and so far. But right now, he's about 7 points ahead pretty consistently. I've been looking at the lines. Oh, there's a great website, 538. All these the analysts are on there. The fluctuations of his lead are pretty small. The thing you want to remember about polls is not to get overly excited in a bad way or a good way over a single particular poll, right? That a single particular poll doesn't count for much. And the polls themselves, unless you want to be a real specialist in this, have very different degrees of professionalism and accuracy. And something like 538 is able to go in there and weight them based on their past performance. You know, for most of us, we don't really want to do that. We want something to sum up. So most of my data today is from 538, great site. You might think that the way to poll is just make random calls. You know, you just take a computer, have it generate a random numbers for a certain area, and you call those numbers, and there you are, you have a random poll. The problem is that the polls have to be weighted because white folks answer the poll more often than black and Latino folks. Women answer the phone more often than men, and older people answer it more often than young people, so that it throws the polls off. And one reason there's so much difference, some of it is fluctuation and just statistical fluctuation, but one reason the polls are different is how they weight these different things. And whether they're, you know, whether including cell phones and whether they're generated by a computer, these are the least reliable polls, or whether they're actually have a person calling. So this year, normally there's a convention bump after each convention, Democrat convention bump and Republican convention, big bump. This year, not so much. Very little in the way of increase from either convention. No one's quite sure whether it's because they were online. Some people think that Trump's speech, if compared to one in 2016, ending the show, was pretty boring, long-winded, repetitive, and just didn't do anything for Republicans. Otherwise, Republican convention was well done, so was the Democratic convention, but no big bumps. The stats are staying the same. There are more women running this year than ever in American history. More women running. So that's the nature of polls. There's some other disturbing things for Democrats, and that's this. The Electoral College is biased in favor of Republicans. Just the structure of the college gives Republicans an advantage. if Biden wins by only 1 to 3 percentage points, he could still lose the electoral vote. Depends on how it plays out in a particular state. But 1 to 3% will not deliver Biden the presidency necessarily. Once he begins to win by 4 to 7%, then it becomes pretty decisive. But understand that it's important that everyone get out and vote and encourage all your friends and recruit your non-voting neighbors if you think they're going to vote well. Because Democrats have to win by a higher percentage than Republicans do to get the office. So in the last couple of decades, we've had two minority presidents, Bush and Trump, in terms of the popular vote. That is liable to continue until there's a reform of the Electoral College. So Biden has to win big. It looks like he will do well. He stayed at about 7%. It hasn't gone much. I was looking at the trend lines, and it goes up and down a little bit, but he's staying pretty steady at 7%. Don't get upset if it suddenly drops. Biden's lead is much better than the winning president's candidates have had over the last 20, 30 years. In other words, he's in better shape at this particular date in the contest than almost anybody else, you know. Certainly than Obama was, and certainly than that Bush was. Arizona, North Carolina, I'm looking at my notes here, and Florida are the states most likely to flip, right? Arizona and Florida are likely to flip in the Democratic direction, if they flip, and North Carolina North Carolina is liable to flip Democratic, and Florida, Arizona, they're all liable to go that way. States that can decide the election are mostly in the upper Midwest. And we're talking about Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and Michigan. Upper Midwest, you're going to see massive amount. We're talking to Gary later. They're going to see massive amounts of advertising in those states because they're crucial to this election. And what else? All right, so everybody's worried about an October surprise. Most of the calculations figure that in. In other words, an October surprise would have to flip the election very substantially. It can't flip the election 2 or 3 points and change the results. It has to be something really, really massive. So far, almost none of the smear stuff that the Republicans have been generating or criticisms of Biden have stuck very well. Nobody's impressed that he's a secret agent of the far left or that, his son worked for a company in Ukraine or all the rest of it. What they seem to be aiming to do now is to try to find what will stick. In other words, they're throwing all this mud. Nothing seems to work. And they seem to be more and more shifting their focus to the violence in American cities, the demonstrations in American cities. The cities they claim are Democratic strongholds, and there's riots and demonstrations in there, and Donald Trump will bring order to the country and suppress those demonstrations and riots. The problem is, of course, the murder rate and the demonstrations are up in Republican-controlled cities, too. So it's not true, but it's a kind of arguing point that Republicans are fond of. The rising murder rate is another thing that seems to be very disturbing. For a decade, while the Republicans have been talking about the murder rate and violence and stuff, it's been going down and down and down. The last couple of years, it's begun to go up. What's making a difference in this election? Why is Biden leading by a 7% in the polls? And the answer is really suburban voters, educated suburban voters, are turning Democratic and they're planning to vote for Biden. Trump has continued to lose suburban voters. The law and order stuff that he's throwing out now doesn't seem to impress well-educated people, educated people in the suburbs. And it's not that they're better than other people. It's just that's where the demographics are changing. I'd like to turn to Arizona. So that's the general story. The general story looks good for Democrats. Certainly don't want to be complacent. Polls are difficult to analyze. Take them with a grain of salt. And those are some of my advice. Arizona is likely one of the flip states or the most contested states in the United States. Trump only won by 4% in the last election. Generally, Republicans win in Arizona by 8% plus. So he really didn't win here. Biden is now up 9% in the sort of raw polling in Arizona. Biden up 9%. He's up 4.6 once they do all the weighting and calculations and stuff. 4.6 is very substantial in Arizona. It could decide most elections. Remember that Maricopa is 60% of the Arizona vote. And so about 80% of the vote is in Pima County with Tucson and Maricopa. And so carrying Maricopa is extraordinarily unpopular because the counties that Democrats have a real advantage in, like Apache County, which is 73% Navajo, are very small and have a small popular vote. So that's fine for congressional elections, but it's not as telling for the overall picture in Arizona. The Latino vote, the percentage of Arizonans that are of Latino extraction has gone up from 23% in 2000 to 31%. Many of them are not eligible to vote. They don't vote in huge percentages. Like the rest of the nation, Biden is leading in Arizona largely because suburban voters are turning to him. So I don't know, Klaus, Gary, do you have any questions about the polls, or should we go on to Klaus talking about what happens when the election occurs?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
The peaceful, you know, and voluntary presidential transition is one of the enduring aspects of the quote American experiment, and it was a precedent established by George Washington. Refused to run for a third term in spite of pressure to do so. I think we can, unless there's a Democratic landslide, which is an outside possibility, we should assume that that it's narrow, and that's quite likely we will have some kind of constitutional crisis. Trump is doing everything he can to throw chaos into the election. He's turned the post office into a political tool. He keeps saying constantly that mail-in votes are inevitably fraudulent, and he refuses, for the first time I've heard any president say that he refuses to say that he's going to accept the election results. So what happens if he doesn't? So that's a likely scenario. So the positive, it's going to be chaotic, but the positive outcome would be that if the president refuses to vacate election office, then he could well be reminded that he needs to during a visit from the leader of both parties and Senate and House. That's the same group that persuaded Nixon to resign. And to beef things up, which is probably necessary.
Get on the phone a little more, Klaus, or we're losing you at a little of what you're saying.
Okay. That a group might be joined by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to make it clear that the military will also stand with the Constitution rather than a rogue president. I mean, the military has consistently hinted, or not even hinted, pointed to the fact that, you know, that they're sworn oath to the Constitution, not to a person like in Germany during the Nazi period. So there are probably lots of lawsuits, and started by Trump. And so if these lawsuits delay the inauguration of a new president past the constitutionally scheduled date of January 20th, then this would be ironic, but then the law of presidential succession becomes effective, and then the Speaker of the House would become the new president until things are straightened out. And while serving as interim president, Pelosi could order Trump's arrest and confinement in the tower, the Trump Tower and the house arrest.
I thought you meant the Tower of London there for a second, Klaus.
Well, that was the implication.
Well, I'm not against that really, personally, but still.
So that's, you know, I would consider that the positive outcome. Now let's talk about the not so pleasant alternative. As you know, the Republicans all around the country have passing voter ID laws, purging voter rolls, and cutting the number of polling places in urban areas, forcing people to stand in line for hours to exercise their right to vote. It's really a war on voters. And then the Republican Party has reportedly deputized 50,000 poll watchers, quote unquote, to intimidate minority voters on election day. So this will be a very different election than we've ever had because of COVID-19. And it will be largely a mail order, a mail-in election, which Trump has already said he is not likely to recognize. And the counting of the ballots will go well beyond November 3. New York was still counting ballots over a month after the June 23 primary. So,
but if the win is decisive,
if the win is decisive, all this goes out of the window.
Okay.
So what may happen, and has been speculated widely, is that Trump may be ahead on the count on election day ballots, but that the mail-in ballots will skew Democratic, and Trump is already crying fraud.
So he'll claim the election, Klaus. Let's let it get clear. So he would claim the elect that he's won the election on election day, when in fact a good percentage, if not a majority, of votes would still not yet be counted because they're mail in, and Democrats tend to send in more mail in votes than Republicans do. Right? Is that
exactly? That's the assumption on this scenario. So to steal the election, you could quite likely adopt what's the standard playbook of authoritarians: cast doubt on the election by filing numerous lawsuits, launching coordinated federal and state investigations, call on militia groups to intimidate election officials and instigate violence, rely on fringe social media to generate rumors that are untraceable, and Fox News to amplify those messages as fact, and just create a climate of confusion and chaos. He might ask the Department of Justice and Homeland Security, which are now, weapons against democracy, to deploy big cities and swing states to stop the vote count or seize ballots. If he does all this, then, you know, he'll try to put soldiers on the street and flame the space and convince millions of people that the election is being stolen from him. So what's the end game of that? Under the Constitution, state legislatures decide how to appoint electors, but they have all chosen to rely on the popular vote. But they could create a false justification to claw back to power. The legislatures in all the closely contested states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Florida, and North Carolina, are controlled by Republicans. So Trump could argue that the mail-in ballots should not be counted and ask state legislatures to appoint electors different from the ones chosen by voters. It hasn't happened before, but it almost happened in the 2000 election. Florida's Republican legislator seriously considered stepping in and doing just that. So all this
sounds like a horrible mess, Klaus. It sounds constitutional
exactly.
Crisis squared.
As I said, this is the negative assumptions, right?
So this is if the vote is closed.
Would prevent the electors from casting their ballots and allow Trump to get a competing slate of electors sent to Congress from the state. So either way, he would have then pushed the election to January when the new Congress meets to decide the outcome. At that point, it becomes weird because there's a law written in 1887 that's poorly written, but stipulates that if neither candidate receives a majority of the Electoral College, then the 12th Amendment allows the House of Representatives to choose the president. Now, you might think that sounds really good, except that under that law, the rule is that each state delegation gets one vote, so that the lone Republican congressman from Wyoming has the same voting powers as the 52 members of the overwhelming Democratic California delegation. So right now, Republicans control a majority of the state delegations, even though the Democrats control the chamber. So that's the horrendous possibility. At that point, you know, we have a real constitutional crisis, and who the hell knows what happens next at some point.
Let me ask you one question before we go to Gary. Gary, we'll talk together at the end. What do you think the response to Trump doing and the Republicans doing something like this would be? What would be the best Democratic response, or what do you think would happen? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't know what would happen. We're in uncharted territory now. I mean, if the there could be serious civil unrest. You know, our side would have to go and have large demonstrations, because that's one thing that has shown to be effective. But it would be a horrible situation, and American democracy would really stand at the teetering point.
And America as a country would be deeply weakened by this kind of thing. We'd look like, I guess it's a politically incorrect term, we look like a banana republic. We look like a tin pot dictatorship place that has to have demonstrations to settle who's the president. I mean,
well, it would undercut. One thing I haven't talked about, because I really don't know how it would fit, the Supreme Court will play a role, right? At some point, this will go to the Supreme Court as it did in 2000. There's a conservative majority on the Supreme Court, but I can't imagine that even though you're conservative, that you're going to ignore the Constitution and the obvious will of the voters. But, you know, this is all speculative. The point is that we could go, and in my opinion, more likely than not, go through a very difficult period unless we have a Democratic sweep.
Let's bring Gary into the discussion. Gary, what do you want to focus on this morning? You're up in Minnesota, and Minnesota is a crucial state in this election, right?
Right. I would just kind of tag off of what Klaus said. If the worst happens and the Democrats lose another election by theft, which we did in 2000, and in reality, in 2016, I think we'll turn into Belarus. I think there'll be massive demonstrations. But anyway, in Minnesota has now become, it's always been reliably Democratic, with a few exceptions. In my lifetime, it's only voted for a Republican presidential candidate once, and that was for Nixon in 72. And it's only had really two conservative governors in recent years. But it's now basically a Democratic leadership in the state, with a Democratic governor and lieutenant governor and attorney general and so on. But it's now being called for grabs, and Trump and Biden are both spending a lot of money and time here. We're going to have both campaigns in the state, I think, tomorrow, certainly this week. They're spending a lot of money. Trump has been running the commercials showing America in chaos, and that Biden is going to cause the country to basically go to war with itself. But it's not as bad as some people think. You know, I know that Nate Silver is calling it a toss-up, and I know a lot of others are, but the most recent polls in the state show Biden up by 10 points. And, the bigger battles, I think, are going to be with the Tina Smith Senate seat. That's, if you may remember, that's Al Franken's old seat before he was pushed out. That's considered a toss-up, and at least one, I think several of the Democratic gains in the House in 2018 are now considered toss-ups, at least the one in my congressional district is. Basically, it breaks down kind of urban versus rural, which seems to be the case across the country. The Democratic Party in Minnesota is called the DFL, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. It was a merger of political parties way back when. And it's always controlled both farmers and labor unions, but that's no longer the case. Oddly enough, even though we're still called the DFL, Trump has gained the votes of a lot of farmers. I think they swung for him pretty substantially in 2016. And the northern Minnesota, the Iron Range, which is where traditionally all the iron mining has taken place, with heavy labor unions, that swung for Trump in 2016. And those two things are what made the race close in that year. I don't really know how
Hillary only won by 2 points, right, Gary? Hillary only won by 2 points in the last election.
Yes, she did.
So it was really close then.
Right. I think there's been some erosion amongst the Trump support, although if you drive across the rural parts of my area, you'll see Trump signs and flags everywhere. And I last week was in Iowa, drove across the state east to west, and I saw Trump signs in the farm fields pretty much everywhere. But even Iowa is considered to be a toss-up, a leaning toss-up this year. It's still a lean Republican, but I think the Republicans are in for a battle there. One thing that you guys are probably experiencing too is around here in my little town of 5,000 people and around the area, anybody that puts up a Biden sign, the sign is pretty quickly stolen.
Yeah, certainly experiencing that in Sedona, where a woman's been arrested for pulling down signs. She pulled down signs, and then somebody followed her, just a citizen followed her because she was stealing signs, and she got scared, and she went to the police department and complained that he was following her, and he said, well, I'm following her because she's guilty of stealing signs, and so the owner of the signs is having her prosecuted. We'll see how that turns out. But we have that situation, which has always been worse down in Cottonwood than Sedona, but, you know, there's always those issues. Some of the signs getting removed here are just sort of non-political. People don't want political signs in Sedona, and so they yank up everybody's political signs. So it's a complex issue.
To put it in perspective, when I was in Arizona and working with the Cottonwood Democrats in 2012, I think we had in excess of 100 signs for Obama stolen. We had I was personally threatened, physically threatened on several occasions, and then we had one couple who were Democrats and had an Obama bumper sticker on the truck, had a bullet go through the back window and out the front with the wife sitting in it. And when the town marshal came to investigate, she walked around the truck, saw the Obama sticker, and said, well, no wonder. You know, you're just asking for trouble. So things haven't really changed, I don't think, a whole lot. And it's only gotten worse, if anything.
Did you want to talk about, as Trump's gotten more and more desperate and more kind of unhinged, I don't know if people see it, but he's acting kind of unhinged for such a even more than he did from the beginning. But he's acting
pretty strange.
All right, he's acting pretty strange. And did you want to talk about the infiltration of some very extreme groups into the Republican Party, the
sure.
QAnon and stuff?
Yeah, I'd like to first say that you know, if you really look at what Trump has accomplished or done while he's been president, there's no way this should even be a close election. I mean, we have 190,000 dead from the pandemic. He's been pushing hydrochloroquine and injecting bleach and UV rays into your body. The economy is now at 8.4% unemployment and it's growing. You know, we have 12% of adults need food assistance in the U.S., and that's growing as well. You have all the racist things that he and his administration have done with Charlottesville and Portland. You have his photo op in front of the church across the street from the White House, in which he had the police and the military clear the peaceful demonstration. You have 14 Trump associates indicted. He was impeached for the Ukraine scandal. You have the military scandal with the comments about McCain and the fallen soldiers. You have the emoluments with his D.C. hotel and his golf resorts. You have runaway corruption throughout his administration with Pruitt and Zinke and Mnuchin and DeVos and DeJoy. You have the massive turnover of staff. When everyone leaves, they write books telling how bad it was.
Gary, one of the things...
Kids in cages. It goes on and on and on.
I got you. One of the things people are saying is that Trump believes that nobody cares about his character, and that's why he can talk about American soldiers, Americans who've died in battle and stuff. Very discursively, that information seems to be coming from his old chief of staff, John Kelly, and various other military and civilian officials. It sounds like Trump, i.e. John Kelly, will not go public with it, but it sounds like he's the one who's talked about the kind of stuff that Trump has said about soldiers. I think part of it is his just sociopathic tendencies. What about QAnon?
I think also, just to finish with that, is that I think there's just the volume of scandals that no one can focus for very long on one of them. So as soon as you one happens, people start to investigate, and before anything really happens with the investigation, something else happens. So, let me go into QAnon.
Tell people what it is, because many folks may not know. Some people really know, but some of us are still sketchy about it.
Yeah, I've been researching this for a mini book. Q is supposedly some insider in the government, the federal government, that no one knows, what position, but claims to be, part of the government for a long time. And in 2017, October of 2017, this person called Q wrote on a white supremacist website called 4chan, quote, HRC, Hillary Rodham Clinton, extradition already in motion effective yesterday with several countries in case of cross-border run, passport approved to be flagged effective October 30th, expect massive riots organized in defiance and others fleeing the U.S. to occur. U.S.M.'s military will conduct the operation while the National Guard activated. Proof check, locate a National Guard member and ask if activated for duty October 30th across most major cities.
So a tissue of fraudulent lies is how it starts.
Of course, none of that was true, but it got a following. And, Q continues to make preposterous claims in what are called drops that have occurred on for a long time on 4chan, but then started on other social media and on YouTube. And if you go on YouTube and you search for Q or QAnon, you'll find hundreds of videos of just preposterous claims. And the basic belief of the QAnon phenomena, or the cult, and that's what it is. It is a cult. Is that?
But not individual people gathering as a cult. It's an internet cult, really. Something.
Well,
new.
Yeah, but they also gather at Trump rallies. You'll see people outfitted with Q, apparel and holding up Q signs. But the basic premise that they're pushing is that the world, especially the U.S., is run by a worldwide child sex trafficking ring, run by a satanic cabal consisting of leaders of the Democratic Party, A-list celebrities, and Pope Francis. And these people... it has a following of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, and none of the drops or claims have ever been proven true.
Didn't somebody get elected to Congress?
They're running. I think in Georgia, Klaus. They haven't gotten elected yet.
There's about 14. Congressional candidates and Congress representatives that have QAnon beliefs, but the one in Georgia is the first openly Q fruitcake. They believe that the targets of Q are the Clintons, Obama, Bill Gates, Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg, Robert Mueller, George Soros, Ellen DeGeneres, Oprah Winfrey, Justin Trudeau. It goes on, and John Legend, Chris Teigen, the Gates Foundation, the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the CDC, Wayfair. There's this bizarre thing that Wayfair has been sending children out in AMWAs to customers and that, you know, that's part of the sex trafficking ring of children. And whenever you confront them on that none of these things have ever been proven true or ever, you know, they've mostly been proven untrue, they simply turn it around and say, well, prove it's not true. You know, it's we don't know. This could still happen.
I thought it was interesting. Didn't this start with the claim that there was a sex ring run by Hillary Clinton and her campaign manager in a pizza place in Washington? I thought that was really interesting because there's 320 million plus people in the United States, and the sex ring happens to be run by Donald Trump's presidential opponent. And just it's not an accident, you know. It's deliberate.
The belief is that only Trump can save us from this cult or from this this cabal, that he has been chosen to lead a revolution against the deep state. It's part fantasy, it's part cult, it's part religion, it's part I think a lot of its followers are the video gamers that are looking for some, you know, great puzzle to solve. It's just, you know, that crap crazy. And one of the things that I think is truly disturbing about it is that it hasn't been taken down from YouTube, and it's growing. And 56%, a recent survey found that 56% of people who call themselves Republican believe in Q, or at least partially believe in Q, in QAnon.
Let's ask Klaus what's his take on it, because Klaus was raised in post-war Germany. Does this kind of talk and conspiracy stuff seem resonate with past experience, or is this something really new?
Well, I think it's more new than anything else. I mean, the Jews were accused of also running, you know, a secret worldwide conspiracy, but it didn't. Nothing as fantastic. I mean, as an imaginative, if you want to call it that, as child sex ring. But yeah, there were stuff. You know, there was lots of stuff told about Jews, you know, that.
I guess our time is about up, Gary and Klaus, and I really appreciate you guys calling in on fairly short notice. Felicia French is going to be our interview next week. Felicia's absolutely great candidate. She's running for the state Senate, and she'll be on the show next week. Democratic Perspective is really open to a lot of different views and stuff. If you have ideas and comments and stuff, get on our Facebook page. Mike Cosentino is on there right now. He'll be glad to give you his take on things and what he thinks. So we've got 1 minute left. Gosh, the election's coming up. The big key, folks, is to get really involved now. Because of the restrictions of COVID, the candidates are going to need money, more money than usual, to buy media in order to stay competitive. I've been looking at some of the vicious ads that McSally, who votes 94% of the time with Trump, has put out against Mark Kelly attacking his character. She began with ineffective ads. She's now got effective ads. They're totally dishonest and explainable, but she's doing it. We need to get out and support our candidates. We have to win big. Thank you for being with us, folks. I appreciate you tuning in to Democratic Perspective. Tune in next week. Felicia French, great candidate for the Arizona State Senate. Thank you.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.